Hi, I'm here today talking to Fiona Mäkinenä from Fair Play for Women. Hi, Fiona.
Hi, Heather.
Fiona, most people that are going to be listening to this podcast will probably know of you, or certainly know of Fair Play for Women. It's got a fabulous reputation. It's been doing some great work. I wonder if you could just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you, and then maybe how you got engaged and working with Fair Play for Women.
Yeah, well, let me start with how Fair Play for Women started. So that was back in 2017 when Dr. Nicola Williams, realized that there were men in women's prisons. And she was so horrified, she could hardly believe it. She went off and researched it, did FOI requests, which WRN women know a lot about now. And she was one of the first then to go on the mainstream media talking about how trans policies had led to sexual assaults and rapes in women's prisons. And that was in, as I say, 2017. She was on Good Morning Britain with Piers Morgan and India Willoughby. And then in 2018, the big push that Fair Play for Women did was to stop GRA becoming self-ID in the UK. And a huge street campaign, hundreds of women out in red T-shirts saying hands off our rights. And then in 2019, that's when I joined. So beginning of 2019 or end of 2018, I contacted Fair Play for Women and said, I need to do more. I mean, like a lot of women, you know, I'd been following this. I've been writing letters and seeing stuff going on and started to go to meetings and just generally getting more and more horrified. And I thought, right, I've got to do something. So from early 2019, I picked up the sport campaign, the sport part of our work. And we, a group of us, were contacting sports bodies in the UK, looking at what their policies were for who was eligible for the women's category and saying, this isn't okay. And back then, people pretty much ignored us. They really didn't take it very seriously at all. But we kept going, you know, we pushed and pushed. We had meetings with Sport England and UK Sport and the kind of the government bodies who influence the rules. Sharon Davis was already speaking out, so we got together with her. We put on a big meeting at the QE2 Conference Centre, the place where LGB Alliance hosts their annual conference. So we had a big meeting there, 700 people talking about this. Sharon spoke. And then eventually, as you've seen, you know, we've started to get some recognition that it matters, that women matter and it makes a difference. So I'm still working a lot on that. Today, I will be talking to two sports bodies, one in Wales and one international one, to try to get them to rethink their policies. So it's a lot of work behind the scenes that we're doing all the time.
Well, there's some tremendous work that you have done. Can you clarify, it's not just about sport, is it? Fair Play for Women is all aspects of this battle that we're in.
We tend to work behind the scenes. It tends to be trying to influence policy. So although 2018 was a big street campaign and raising awareness, it was also pushing people to respond to the government consultation. And in fact, when the self-ID decision was finally kicked into touch for the UK, and when the government announced what had come out of the public consultation on gender recognition changes, they said that the single biggest number of responses to the policy proposals had come via Stonewall, and the second biggest volume had come via Fair Play for Women. Mm-hmm. So we'd automated, as I say, I wasn't involved then, but Nicola Williams and her crowd had automated responses through the website, so they made it very easy for people to respond. So that was the last sort of big public campaign. And since then, it's been much more researching what's going on, trying to influence the right people, you know, getting through civil servants and politicians and policy advisors. So the prison work went on for years, and now we're seeing some big change there. And we're also seeing great organizations like Keep Prison Single Sex focusing on that. Sport, we'll probably talk about again. But yes, other areas. So we sued the Office for National Statistics over the census. Data and data recording has been a big area and continues to be. Right now, we're doing some work on data recording in the NHS. Because data is one of those things that seems a bit dull and dry, but as we know, if you don't record someone's sex correctly, you know, everything goes wrong after that. And in fact, it was a few years ago now that we did FOIs, just like you've just done with the police and rapes. We did FOIs across all the police forces on how they were recording the sex of rape suspects, and found that many of them were recording on the basis of self-ID. And that was quite widely reported at the time. And yeah, I mean, it's still happening. You know, the Home Secretary said stop it, but it's still happening. So I think what we see is that you have to keep going and keep going. So as I say, right now we're doing some work on data recording in the NHS. The census, you know, we won the fight for England, Wales and Northern Ireland that when they said, what is your sex, male or female, you had to answer according to your birth certificate and not, you know, because you had a letter from the doctor and your passport says you're something else. So that was really important. But what you've seen is the nonsense of how they ask the gender reassignment question. Because, and we knew this from the work we did with the ONS and indeed the preparation for the legal case, they spent a couple of years interacting with Stonewall and other trans lobby groups on exactly how to ask the questions that they wanted asked. And they didn't approach it like a normal piece of market research where you need to ask a really sensible question that everyone can understand. They pitched it as, what is it that Stonewall would like us to tell the world, you know, about what it means to be trans? If you look at that question, that's what it is. It's a kind of, let me explain to you all what it means to be trans. Yeah. So obviously the people who didn't understand the question just said no. And if you answered no to that question, it meant you got counted as trans. So that's how we've ended up with one in 67 Muslims are transgender. And if you don't speak good English, you're five times more likely to be trans than if you do speak good English. Yeah. So they're really, so the census matters, the data matters, because those set the benchmarks for how everyone else follows. I mean, even when COVID studies started to be done, we engaged with the people doing some of the big COVID studies because they were starting to follow what they thought the ONS was going to do in the census, which was self-declared sex and gender identity. And they even said, well, we do what the ONS does. That sets the norm. So winning the census case for, you know, sex means sex, very important. Scotland, whole other story.
Mm-hmm.
How they ended up with a different verdict, I can't say, except that a bit like some of the court cases we've seen, the training of the judiciary by trans activists goes very deep. It's the same with the police. You know, they really seem to believe that people can change sex and that it's deeply harmful to deny that. And that's how you end up with these kind of crazy decisions.
Yes. That's, some of it is just incredible to think that these are, you know, when I first got involved in it, I thought these are otherwise really intelligent, educated people. How can they, this is just so basic. How can they be turning a blind eye to what's going on? But I mean, that's not stopped anything, clearly. It never has.
No, and it's interesting you say that, because I've had people say to me that, you know, it doesn't make sense, and so it must be just something they don't understand. They just accept it at face value and they don't try and interrogate it at all. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I'd say is that they know that it's mainly women who will feel the effects of this. So, you know, when the International Olympic Committee first agreed to allow transsexual men, so men who had full surgery, into women's events, this was 20 years ago, literally 20 years ago, they said it wouldn't there wouldn't be very many of them, and it would mainly affect masters women's events, so older women. So they basically knew that it was unfair, but they didn't care because it only affected women, and particularly older women. Now, it's not true that it only affects older women, as we've seen, because the phenomenon has grown so much. But as an illustration of the mindset, it's upsetting, but it's why we're here, isn't it?
It is exactly why we're here. And it actually resonates with the interview that we talked about earlier that Joe Phoenix gave with Five Live. When the presenter said if these had been not rapes and sexual assaults and all sort of, if they'd been stabbings, it would be an entirely different story. And we wouldn't be in the case where, you know, we have to scrabble around with FOIs and pulling spreadsheets together. It would just be an outrage. So women are second class, and the crimes committed against women are, you know, barely making cover.
Well, I think that's why the growth of women's activists, you know, in the UK in the last couple of years has been so important. We thought, a lot of us thought, our rights were secure. We thought that it was understood now that you shouldn't discriminate against women just for being women. And I think people do believe that broadly, or at least they know they're not allowed to claim otherwise. But what I hadn't understood was that when the focus moves to other groups, that can have a negative impact on us and nobody cares.
Yes.
And so that's the big push, is to say, hold on a minute, we can't be ignored. And it's going to take, you know, an army of women and like the Women's Rights Network to make that stick. Because what we've also seen, and we at Fair Play for Women, we've had some significant policy shifts at government level. You know, we've seen some of that happen, but it doesn't always cascade down into practice. It can take a very long time. Mm-hmm. When at grassroots level, the police and the judiciary and, you know, the Crown Prosecution Service and teachers and all of these people who work in local authorities, when they've all had years of training and indoctrination that you've got to accept trans people at their word, you've got to treat someone according to the sex they say they are, not the sex they actually are, and the consequences for everyone else don't matter. Well, that doesn't get undone just because the Home Secretary says stop it, or the Department of Education issues new guidelines. It takes a long time. So we've got to be coming at this top down and bottom up.
We do. And on that point, there are a lot of organizations like Fair Play for Women, Sex Matters, Women's Rights Network, all in the battle, all doing something, and so that every level of that is being addressed. I think it would just be interesting for people listening to know that we do talk to each other, these organizations. We may not agree on everything or all our tactics, but we do generally talk to each other and interact.
Oh, I mean, I think that we're pretty good at collaborating. I mean, we talk a lot. There are so many connections, both overt connections and then behind the scenes and then personal connections and then people like me who are in my local group, REN group, but also in Fair Play for Women, and, you know, lots and lots and lots of duplication. I actually think, though, that it's very helpful that there are different groups and different voices and different styles, because we can achieve different things that way. You know, people who are really outspoken do a lot of good to raise awareness, to shock people. Sometimes it takes that kind of outspokenness to get men's attention. And then different people are the ones who are going to be able to access policymakers, have the kind of meetings that we have, where we've not been out in the streets, you know, swearing up a storm, and therefore we're considered acceptable. Mm-hmm. I think we share nearly all the same beliefs. But for the purposes of being effective, we adopt different tones of voice and different language and different, you know, different degrees of what we will and won't say, because that's how together we'll get the job done.
It is indeed. There are so many different battlefronts, and each battlefront needs different tactics and different approaches. It's a long game. We've got a long way to go. We're more fortunate than a lot of other countries in that we're still holding off on the self-ID, most of the country. But it's still a long battle, because we're trying to unpick what's been happening, what's been allowed to happen while we were looking the other way.
Well, exactly. And I think people should take comfort from the fact that we've made huge progress in the last 4 or 5 years. And I think it's accelerating. I really do. If you look at the media now and see how much coverage there is of stuff, and a few years ago, that simply wouldn't have happened. So we're making huge progress, and we're pushing back on something that was 20 years in the making, you know, or longer. I mean, Press for Change and the Jogjakarta principles were, you know, nearly 30 years ago that they all started. So we, we do have a lot to unpick, but we have to recognize it will take a bit of time. And I really do think we're getting close to a tipping point now.
It feels good, actually. It feels so much better. But you're so right. This time last year, it's just things have changed, that we're getting media coverage that we didn't get. We've been fighting for, you know, any media to pick this up. Still BBC, we all feel could do a little bit more for us. So tell us what do you think big achievements? Now, I know that you won't credit Fair Play for Women with these, and we've talked about the court case that you took, but you have worked on. So what do you think in terms of sport, Fiona? I know that's your a key focus area for you. So what are the key things, do you think, over the last couple of years?
Yeah. So I think, right now, we are still trying to make sports organizations change their policies. And I mentioned I've got two meetings even today. But the big shift in sport was when the sports councils of the UK published their transgender guidance, which was 18 months ago. And that it basically told sports bodies that they couldn't just pretend that including male people in women's sport was fair, that they could make a choice about where their priority was, but that wasn't a legal requirement and it wasn't fair and sometimes wasn't safe for women. And that, again, I can't say how that came about, but, you know, we and others were pushing and pushing for some time to say, you need to look at this, you can't ignore it. So they did commission that work and then finally published the report. So September 21, big moment. I have to say, I thought when that came out that sports bodies, NGBs, governing bodies would rapidly adopt fairness again for women. How naive I was. But now we are seeing some big changes. And, you know, piece by piece, you know, one of the first to change was British Triathlon. We were involved in their process. They involved lots of people in their process, you know, across the whole spectrum of views. And that's how it should be. I guess it was an illustration, though, of something really important, which was the end of no debate. And that, I think, is the single biggest achievement that we all have, because after the end of no debate, after we've legitimized talking about women's needs, and we don't have to be ashamed of that, it's not selfish, we don't have to put other people's needs first, now we can have sensible policy discussions. So we're at that point. So British Triathlon adopted open and female. So if you don't want to say what your sex is, or if you aren't female, you go in the open category, and only women born female go in the women's category. And that's very simple.
Yep.
England volleyball did the same. Again, we were involved in reviewing their policy. I'm sure other people were too. And that process continues. We tend not to say who we've met with or what we've done unless the sport body themselves says so. But we are now at the point where we're seeing draft policies. We're reviewing them. We're trying to make them as good as they can be. Some people clearly still feel that they have to accommodate people with a cross-sex identity in some way in sport. So we saw that with Swim England, where all the licensed competition, which is all the stuff that matters, is sex-based. But they have these little kind of beginner competitions that are unlicensed that might just be in your own local club or whatever. And they let those be on the basis of self-ID. Now, arguably, that doesn't really matter very much. But then if it doesn't matter very much, why do it? You're giving something to trans-identifying people at the expense of the female competitors. But I think what it illustrates is how hard they're finding it to roll back policies and in effect say to people, you are the sex that you were born, and sometimes that matters, as in sport. We've got more things coming in sport. The big breakthrough this year was athletics,
mm-hmm.
World Athletics, and then UK Athletics, and we know that other sports will follow athletics. So, you know, they're the biggest Olympic sport. They're the ones who have the problem with DSD athletes, which kind of, you know, confuses this whole issue. They're the ones who've had the courage to say, actually, no, there is no way to be fair on women and girls in sport if we let any males into their category. And thank goodness for that. So that this year has been really good. And we know there's more coming. But there are some other sports that are pretty determined that they won't listen to women. I mean, it's really painful. You know, there's a big sport that had a consultation where they did online focus groups with their female members. And one of them reported back to me that, to her horror, on this discussion group about the rules for the female category that was meant to be a women-only group, there was a trans woman who proceeded to say, "This is not fair on me. I don't have an advantage. I need to be in the women's category." So it was really hard for them to have an open conversation. So we still got a way to go. I mean, I didn't know before I started this that there are 60 different sports with governing bodies in the UK. And because the home nations often have different governing bodies, there are, you know, something like 150, 160 governing bodies of sport in the UK. So it's a lot of work to try and influence them all. But when somebody like UK Athletics and Swim England, you know, these big sports, when they make the move, makes it much easier for other sports to follow. So I'm fully expecting to see a lot more fair policies restored this year, but it won't happen. In some sports, it won't happen unless we keep pushing and pushing and pushing.
And it's not just at elite level. There's such awful things happening at grassroots levels, you know, boys playing in women's football, girls' football teams.
Yeah.
It's entirely unfair. It's unfair on the side that they're on because there's a girl that's not playing. And it's unfair on the opposing team because there's a male advantage in that.
Yeah. I mean, we've never argued that it's only about elite sport. Elite sport is 1 or 2% of all sport. And so 98, 99% of sport is not elite. It's schools, it's clubs, it's teenagers coming through trying to be good at sport, you know, the talent pathway. But it's also all the rest of us just being average and just doing it for our own enjoyment. And so we push really hard with governing bodies. If they start any of that kind of, "Oh, well, of course it has to be fair, whether there's money or prizes or careers," we say, no, if it's unfair for those people, it's unfair for everyone. And you will not have a talent pathway through schools and through the teenage years if you have that kind of unfairness, because girls look at it and say, "I've got no chance. I'm not doing that." And we have so many stories across so many sports, but women and girls are still afraid to say so. They still think that they can't, if they speak out, they, and this does happen, of course, they'll be dropped or they'll be told off or they'll be called names. Mm-hmm. I mean, I heard from a woman in a football club, football team, her whole team was basically blackballed and the other local teams wouldn't play them, because her team had decided they wanted to be a women-only team. This is a women's football league, and they are, in theory, all women-only teams, but her team had decided that they didn't want trans women because they didn't want male players.
Yes.
And the other team said they wouldn't play them anymore. Now, that's women doing that to other women.
It's
very sad.
It's very sad indeed. I mean, with young girls, you can understand there's an element of they lose their social grouping. That's why they may not want to speak out. But grown adult women surely should know better.
You would think. I don't know. Maybe you have to get to a certain age before you've got the confidence to.
There is a lot in that. It's about being a confident, confident with your, you know, your income, confident in the place of work, confident with those around you that you can speak your mind. And be able to take a bit of accusations of
I have this discussion sometimes with men when I talk about them on this issue, close friends. I think that it's hard for people to understand. Both men and women sometimes fail to grasp how deeply socialized we are as women to sublimate our own needs and our own feelings, and to put other people first and to fit in. And the whole be kind narrative is so damaging to women, because men don't really feel that need, do they?
No. You know,
I mean, trans women don't feel the need to be kind to females who are upset by, you know, having to compete in a hopeless situation or being knocked down on the football field or any of that stuff. You know, they know that women are upset being in a changing room with a male body, but they don't feel the need to be kind about that. But and yet an awful lot of women seem to feel the need to center other people and not themselves, and seem to think women's rights must be the only campaign area where we're sort of shamed for asserting our rights. You know,
when did that come about?
I don't know, the trans lobby are allowed to us to advocate for themselves, but women are also supposed to advocate for them. That's not right. So I think what we are, I feel that the shift this has made in me is I'm becoming increasingly emboldened to be selfish on behalf of women and girls. And yeah, not to be ashamed. Yes, it's for me. One of the people in a sport that I participate in myself that has a policy of self-ID, and I was talking to her. She was the decision maker, right? She was the EDI woman. And I said, I think it's unfair. I think we need to find a better way to have trans inclusion. You know, I don't think this is right. She said, you seem very invested in this. Well, yes, but why is that wrong? I mean, it was as if to say, well, I think it was almost like hysterical woman, you know, but the implication was that it was not okay for me to want fairness for me. Mm-hmm. And of course, as a woman, I didn't immediately just push back and say, well, of course I am. It's my right. I can't help thinking that's what a man would have done.
Right, Fiona, it was lovely to talk to you. It's really nice. Maybe we'll chat again because we could go on for quite a lot longer. I know we and we do when we're sitting having a coffee.
Yes.
Finally, have you got a word for our members or people listening to this podcast? Key things they could be doing or a bit of encouragement for speaking out like you
do. Yeah, I think we should feel encouraged. I do think that people shouldn't feel despair. Sometimes when you first find out what's been going on, it's so horrifying. You think, what on earth happened? You know, is that how little people think of women and girls, that nobody seems to care about this? And yet then you find that actually lots of people do care. You find lots of other people are aware of it. I'm still shocked sometimes at the people who are not aware. So I would say there are two things that people can do. One of them is to talk about it, to raise awareness that, you know, this is happening. This is like what's happening in prisons, you know, like what's happening in sport and other areas. The hospital story that Women's Rights Network has released, you know, that kind of a story. Clearly, sometimes sex matters and you have to separate male and female. And that's just the way it is. And does anyone disagree? You know, and I think a lot of people say, no, of course, that's completely reasonable. And then you say, well, why are we letting males who say they're women into women's wards or into women's prisons or into women's sports? So I think raising awareness is really important. And then the other thing is, some people think the trans issue is a tiny minority issue because they're thinking about people who identify as trans. And so they say, yeah, but it's such a small issue. It really doesn't matter. It's only a few. I think for those people, it's really important for us to recenter their thinking around the 51% of the population who are female. It's not a small issue. It's not a minority issue because it affects all women and girls. You know, if you feel that you can no longer be confident when you're in a hospital ward, there won't be a male next to you. If you feel, or your daughter feels, that she can no longer be sure that she's entering a sports competition where she won't have to compete against males, that affects everybody female. So it's not a minority issue. So I think those are the two key messages: raise awareness and then have people recenter women in their thinking and understand this is not a trans issue, this is a women's issue.
Great. Thanks very much, Fiona. That's been a really interesting
Heather,
chat.
It's an absolute pleasure as always.
Okay, we'll talk again soon.
See you soon. Bye. Bye.